Namaste and welcome to the Living India podcast by Purvi Shah Paulini. On business topics and global events in connection with spirituality. Integral and sustainable change means to integrate this aspect on a deeper level as well. Because knowing people means knowing business. Okay. Welcome to chapter 3 of our wisdom workshop. Welcome, Julia.
Hi, Purvi.
Hi, good to see you again.
Yes.
So in chapter 3, today we'll be talking about where to find abundance. And here I would also start with a quote from Lao Tzu, which says, when you realize there is nothing lacking, the whole world belongs to you. Getting the connection of the last chapter where we spoke about attachment, I believe that through attachment, we do not realize in how much abundance we actually live in and we already have. And let me say it with a small smiley by saying how much we possess. It's actually, again, a word which is related to attachment, but it's already within us. And how can we distinguish between external abundance and internal abundance? And is there actually a real difference? That is the question which comes up. And looking right now at the external abundance we live in, we are trained to stick to the materialistic world. You know, we believe that abundance comes from external factors, especially from rich people. Whenever I see documentations of how much they have, and they show that they bought their 6th sports car, they have their 50th handbag, and their 232nd pair of shoes, and so on, they believe that this is abundance, you know, and everyone is very much impressed and say, wow, they have achieved so much. And also people who have opened their 6th business, which is well running. I sometimes have really the feeling, what is the driver that people believe that this is fulfilling them? And in order to receive acknowledgement, I think so, because they wouldn't get it otherwise, might be the driver, or maybe other reasons. It's I think, something which is very deep-rooted. And I have also learned through the work which I do in constellation work, for example, that there are often reasons that lie in the past, maybe through wrong role models, through having the feeling I'm not enough or I'm not good enough for my parents, and so on. I don't know what your experiences are, Julia.
We are brought up in this world, and I always say with the Neolithic revolution, we lost the connection to things, to nature, to the planet, because we started creating slavery and ownership. And then came the Industrial Revolution, and there we started to create competition, and we lost the connection towards one another. And along the way, we of course lost the connection towards our insides. So even if we are connected, I call it the disconnectedness in the interconnectedness, we are all connected, and at the same time, we have no sensation, we are not feeling this connection anymore. If we would, we would know that we are everything that is around us, and everything that is around us is within us. And even though we have these separate shapes, we still are all, have all, can do all, everything, know everything. So yes, upbringing brought us where we are, into a world of competition, in trying to get status, trying to be, wanting to be seen by others, because we are not connected and we are not feeling well within ourselves. For some reason, we are not rewarding us as much as our neurohormones need it. So this inner abundance we lose by losing connection to ourselves, by rewarding ourselves, by being good to ourselves, by loving ourselves. And then we need to find it somewhere in the external surroundings, and we somehow don't get it the way we assume that we need to get it. If I look at neurohormones like oxytocin, dopamine, opioids, so these are our lucky hormones, they get created by social closeness, by togetherness, by doing sports, by being rewarded, and all these things happen normally in life. But I think there is this discrepancy between desire and needs. What do we need and what do we desire?
Yeah, and I also think that we do reward ourselves, but most probably with the wrong with the wrong things. For example, with sugar, with alcohol, and we think if we achieved something, we can go shopping today. I'll do something good for me and go shopping. That's the way where we again try to get the abundance from the external points or the rewards in companies is that you increase the salary. And even in the last chapter, we spoke about that. I think we also need a different way of thinking at work. And if we start having a different look at work, we will start also having a different rewarding system. And I think a rewarding system that comes from within has a different quality, yeah, than getting it from outside. And frankly speaking, I'm not a saint. No, I'm also, you know, I love chocolates. I love going out. I love, you know, have a drink with a friend. But I'm quite aware of that it cannot long, it doesn't last for long, and it goes away, and the hole you then fall into is sometimes much bigger than not trying to get yourself rewarded by those external things. Yeah. And the other experience which I also did is if I try to get my reward from within, it has a total different quality and it does last for longer. It's interesting to see and to experience that.
Yes, and maybe we ought to start with children's education here. You know, when we compare our children to the children of the neighbor, they can already walk, they can already talk. You know, it starts in the very young ages, and then we start with the grades in school and stuff. And actually, right now I'm thinking about a children's book I liked to read to my son. This was called One World, and it's by a author Michael Forman. And I just want to shortly talk about this book, because if we have these kinds of books for children and for grown-ups and we read them more and more, maybe we start understanding this abundance this world has for us, holds for us, and this abundance we live in as human beings. So what this book is about, it's about a little girl and her brother playing on the beach. And they discover a little pool in between the rocks at the shore. And it's so beautiful because they find all these things in it. So they take a bucket and they fill the bucket with water. And the things they find in this little pool by the shore, I think it's a shell, a shrimp, some small fish. They put all in there and they create their little world in the bucket. And so what happens is that they even take some more fish in, and the small bucket is too small for this big world they create, and the little fish and shrimp suffer in it because it gets too hot and stuff. So they are thinking about this, what they are doing there. And so in the end, they put the whole life they had in the bucket back into the big ocean and let it go. And then in the evening, they look in the stars and they look in the sky and they understand that this beauty, that we cannot hold the world in this bucket, that our world is just a place we share with all other beings, and there's nothing we ought to keep in a bucket for ourselves. And so in the end it says, and I like it so much, and there is a quote, it says, that moment they decided they would do everything they could do to protect their precious world and the creatures in it. After all, they all lived in one world, and that world too they held in their hands. And I like it so much. And I think if we understand that we are all together in this, that we are sharing this world, that we spend the days with joy, understanding what a treasure all of that is, not wanting to have it in our own bucket for ourselves, I think then we understand abundance.
Yes. And the question, again, I always ask myself, and I always put this question as a question for the listeners, how to get there. And that is always my thriving question is whenever I feel something, is really how to get there. And again, we have to understand, and it's a wonderful story you said, and a wonderful picture to say. You named the word separation. And again, just to recall, when did separation actually happen? And I already said it actually happened through creation of religions, because there is somebody up there and we are here and we have to reach somewhere and have a, lead a good life, and then everything will be fine. And if we still believe in this system, I don't think so we will be able to get the connection. But if we realize, so coming back to the chapter 2, where I said in Buddhism and Hinduism, people do believe in reincarnation and rebirth, and the goal is not to be reborn again. It means not to be reborn in this physical world, because there is a soul, which is called the Brahman. The Brahman is the ultimate soul out of which we all derive from. And then I think kind of self-destruction will stop if we realize that. So what happens if we really start, like the story, to look within? That is exactly what the two children are doing, to realize by, of course, what they are seeing outside, they are realizing it from within. And how to get in touch with this world, how to connect this inner world with the outer world. Now, again, we have to understand that looking at our intellect, which is called in Sanskrit the manas, yeah, M-A-N-A-S, it's written in English, it is part of our outer mind. And this is the instance or the authority which coordinates the reception of information and the actions and deeds. And this is nothing which was just recently detected. This is a philosophy of 5,000 years ago, which I'm trying to explain and trying to give the explanation from my understanding, which doesn't mean it's right, okay? Because even I'm giving an understanding of something from my point of meanings, you know? And the manas, so the intellect, gather the information, it systemizes and evaluates this according to the stored intellectual and emotional background. So our emotional and intellectual background is a very important thing which we have developed till today through our upbringing, through our influence from outside. Yeah, the outer mind itself has values, principles, or goals, which we also spoke about in the last chapter, which all derive from the intelligence, which is the buddhi, which is the middle part of our spirit. Yeah. And it is, its concern is the expansion and the exploration of the external world, seeking pleasure and avoiding pain, as we already discussed that. So putting that into a context sometimes helps, because there is a framework which was already set 5,000 years ago. I'm always so astonished about that, that 5,000 years people without all these instruments which we have today in science were able to detect that. Yeah. And the manas, working apart from the intelligence, causes us to think aimlessly. So the intellect, working apart from the intelligence, which is the buddhi, the higher intelligence, this causes us to think aimlessly, without purpose, as in daydreaming, idle speculation, or idle calculation. Yeah. So the outer mind itself has values, principles, or goals, which all derive from the intelligence. And its concern is the expansion and exploration of external worlds, seeking pleasure and avoiding them. So its purpose is to afford us experience in the realm of the sense, not establishing lasting values. That is also very interesting. So these values will not last. It is somewhere else. And as long as we operate on this level, we are purely sensate creatures. So if we now try to connect ourselves with the intelligence, the buddhi, and not only work with the intellect, which, and try to connect them. And this is how, for example, not only meditation, but looking into the inner world, that can support us and help us to get there and then find the connection. Because I believe very much that we have internalized very, very well in all these centuries how it works to be connected to the outer world. And we should not forget that, because the outer world is also important. There is a reason why the intellect exists. Yeah, but we have forgotten how to use the inner intelligences. There are different levels, we'll talk later, but I'm just right now talking about the buddhi, which is the middle area of our spirit. So this is something which we have to explore more, I think so.
When we talk about religions and say separation happened in religions, isn't it that we are saying that the higher self is within us? So isn't it just a way to interpret religion to go into the separated thing? And don't we need to separate in order to understand how to integrate? I mean, isn't it just a way, a path on the journey to really understand what this being connected, all is one means? Don't we just need to go through these steps and allow them to happen?
I think it depends on how you define religion. Now, me going to temples in India or going to churches here in Germany, when I listen to the priests, they don't pray really that what you have described right now. Mm-hmm. Because I think it's like reading the Bible or reading the Vedas of 5,000 years ago is like our conversation being translated in 5,000 years in Chinese. And then, you know, and then how you interpret your the words you read. It's like, as I said, what I'm trying to explain is from my explanation or my understanding, but it doesn't mean it's right. And I don't say it's right. It's just the way how I understand it. And I know many other people, and looking at the priests and religious leaders, that, or so-called religious leaders, who to a certain extent misuse that. That's why I have a problem with the word itself, religion. Yeah, because it was created in my understanding to control the people and to also have power to others. So you look up to a priest, you respect, but looking up and respecting is again something a little bit different. Yeah, and you obey to that what they say. And there I fear the problem, the spirituality behind it. What you right now explain is actually what I also understand, which we should follow and actually convey or try to make maybe people feel and understand.
Okay, so looking, I have some things in my mind. So looking at Darwinism now, survival of the fittest and the stuff. So when we know that in order to survive, we need to kill, right? So we need to kill a plant and eat it. I mean, if it's a plant or if it's, so in order to survive, we need to kill. And humans are, let's say, when we look at it from the Darwinistic view, we are the strongest. We are the predator of them all. But we are not, because the little microorganisms, be it viruses, bacteria, or whatever, be it maybe even a tornado or Mother Earth, are stronger. So we are not the biggest eaters of them all. So did we create religions in order to make ourselves believe that we are the controllers of all of this, or to create safety? And then, is it really a deed of controlling others, or rather being in control as human beings and having only good things in mind? You know, I don't know. I don't know why I ask these questions.
And I think this could be dedicated another chapter.
Oh my God.
But I think I would answer right now on the spot, I think as well as to control, and we think we can control everything. I think it's in the nature of humans to have everything under control, as we discussed that in chapter one. On the other hand, there are people who love to control others, which is also depending on which, let's say, mindset level you are. There are enough of people who are not in need to control others, I believe. But I think what I actually wanted to say is that where actually separation started, no? And why this separation started, why was it introduced or why was it implemented, is might be the reason to control others, yeah? And to separate, if God is the God, universe, or whatever, is the highest instance, the question is, why are we here? So if we are not the highest instance, we need to do something in order to feed our egos, to say, hey, I'm the highest instance. Kings were created because they were the highest connection to, considered to be the highest connection to God, you know? And that's why they were worshipped like gods at the end, yeah? Priests is the same. If I look at India nowadays, how religion is becoming more and more prevalent again, in direction of also fanatism, this fanatic people, you have them everywhere in Hinduism, Christianism, in Islam, everywhere. It is a kind of saying that there is only one God, there is only one belief, and that is the reason why we are right. So it's about the question of right and wrong again. Yeah, which leads to nowhere. That's where I believe.
So I believe. Now it is time to go into this reconciliation, reconnection, mutualism, and going out of this survival of the fittest or idea of controlling things into going back into being connected to ourselves, to the others around us, to the world, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I do feel very much in that, because I believe now, if we take the term religion, that in all religions we have abundance, and there is no, you know, God, I think, would say that this is my abundance, dear Jesus, not yours, Vishnu says, or whoever, and they fight for abundance. Now, looking at the mythologies, they did to a certain extent, but in order to serve the people on the planet at the end. Yeah, if you look at the essence behind it. And I think if you look at abundance, which also I believe would be very helpful if we get the connection to the topic leadership, yeah, that if we have leaders who understand that to support your co-workers, to support your employees by offering them all the possibilities, and even if they do maybe better than they are and climb up the career steps in a faster way than they did, it is stepping back or going out of the ego and saying, hey, we all won, and through me, you were able to go there, and through you, something new will emerge. This is, I think, kind of leadership in politics, economics, we need, because abundance is there for everyone.
It's very nice, because now I think about my mother, who just read a book about Hinduism, and she told me about the four laws of Hinduism, and I think I can just add them to this abundance idea, and let's see if the four laws I have in my mind are right. So the first is, the person you meet is always the right person. And my mother says it means that no one enters our lives at random. All people who surround us, who interact with us, stand for something, either to teach us something or to help us move forward. So the second law is, what happens is the only thing that could happen. So nothing, absolutely nothing of what happens to us could have been different, not even an insignificant detail. So if I had done this different, this would have gone different. So this, it's only, you know, everything is perfect. We just need to accept it. So the third law is, every moment in which the thing happens is the right moment. Everything begins at the right moment. And the last thing is, what is finished is finished. As simple as that, when something ends in our life, it serves our development. So therefore, it is good to just let it go and go forward courageously, blessed with the experiences we have made so far. So if we are a leader, and as you say, this situation happens, we can go exactly on these points. Everything happens for a reason. It is a lesson I have learned, and now I can let go. I can give this other person this control I had, and I keep on going my way in another way. So yeah.
Yeah, that's these four laws are wonderful, and thank you for recalling, because I also don't have them always in my mind, but it's right, and it really fits perfectly into our lives and into the philosophy we are right now looking at and trying to speak about. Yeah, thank you for sharing this.
Thank you, Mama.
Yeah, thank you to your mother. That's true. Yeah,
good.
So I think we are done for this topic, and I could really speak longer and longer, but we have many chapters to come. So I thank you again very much, Julia, for your time. I have one question. What is actually, since we are talking about ancient wisdoms, what is wisdom for you?
What is wisdom for me?
Yes.
Everything that I carry within and that I intuitively let out whenever it wants to come out. I have nothing else what I could call wisdom. What about you?
I would just say that wisdom is to reveal the true nature of everything, whatever true nature is.
Wow.
That's for me the definition. There is no right and wrong. Thank you again for your time, Julia, and looking forward for the next podcast with you and the next conversation.
Yes, thank you as well. You really inspire me, Purvi. Ciao.
Same. Thank you for being. See you soon. Ciao. Bye.